Hello. Okay, we're bringing to the podium Chris Anderson and Andrea Long for their presentation, Corporate Evil, The Legal Way to Commit Fraud and Murder, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love Corruption. Chris?
Thanks. Okay, so what I've done here is I've actually conned a real-life professional accountant to come to a hacker conference and talk about money laundering. So say hi to Andrea. Okay, so so go easy on Andrea. She's a civilian. She's never been to a hacker con, never looked out into a sea of black t-shirts and mohawks. So so all the hate, you know, right here, right? But go easy on Andrea. So corporate evil. Before I get into that, I should go through all the, you know, disclaimers so that you don't sue me for all the crazy stuff I'm about to tell you. So we're not lawyers. Actually, my original vision for the talk was an accountant and a lawyer doing accountant lawyer stuff, explaining how to get away, how to commit crime legally the way that every corporation does. And every lawyer that I approached about it backed out. So, you know, accountants, brave. Lawyers, gutless. So yeah, if you see a lawyer, you know, here. Is anybody here a lawyer before I, any accountants? You pretend to be a lawyer? Okay, well, you're cool. But all the other accountants, gutless. So we're not lawyers. A lot of the stuff in this talk is illegal. So you probably should have a lawyer, maybe an expensive one, before you engage in any of these things. I am not an accountant. So this is all my idea, but, you know, I don't really understand. I don't even do my own taxes. The one time I tried, I got audited. Never again. So basically, everything in this talk is illegal, and it's stupid, and you shouldn't do it. And the other thing is, I've learned this year that just about anybody with a crazy idea can submit a talk or submit a proposal for a talk and get it accepted. So you should be real leery about the people in people at podiums, you know, talking and acting like they know things. So this is a really long talk. There's a bunch of slides. So I'm going to go pretty fast. I'll have the talk available for you to download. And so if you miss some key detail. And if you have a question, because the talk's so long, we're going to do a breakout room in case up on the second floor. So if I get jammed up, or I just panic and start talking really fast and I'm done in a half an hour and, you know, I don't know. So basically, I'm going to tell you a story about a corporation I worked for and some of the evil and stupidity I witnessed, and then we'll go into some of the basics of bad things corporations do, stuff that we can do to fight it, and using that evil as a tool for doing good, or at least doing interesting or cool stuff, or even just funny stuff. So, and then I'll go into a project I'd like to start that I need a ton of help on, and then we'll do questions and answers. So misadventures of a Seattle startup company. So who's seen The Social Network? Right, okay, so yeah, brilliant guy in a dorm, starts a company, there's a bunch of drama about money and everything. So my story is like The Social Network, only I'm not cool, but my story is true. So it was a company called Planet 7 Technologies, which was started by two friends with like 13-year-old senses of humor. So do the count, right? Seventh planet from the sun, Uranus. So technology from Uranus. Oh, it slays me. So it's a typical 2001, right? Tons and tons of venture capital money. No earthly idea how we're going to turn a profit, right? We're getting literally having M&M's FedEx to us so that we don't leave our computers, right? And so I'm not a programmer. I'm a program manager. So what does a program manager do? Program manager doesn't manage people. He manages features. So I can't fire a person, but I can fire a feature. It's my job is to, you know, help get things done and to make sure that the product stays on track. which basically means all the programmers, all the testers, all the designers don't want to deal with business people, so they dump that crap on me. So I have to work with the business team to make sure that they know what they're selling and that we're actually making something that they can sell. So anyway, these two guys get pushed out of the company under weird circumstances before I join. And then they bring in this new business management team. So these new professional, quote-unquote, sales dudes come in, and they think that they can't sell a product which is technology from Uranus. I don't really know why. I think that's hysterical. So they decide they're going to rebrand the company. So they're going to change the name. Well, the brand, the name of the company, like the corporation, the legal entity, and the brand are the same thing. So if you want to change the name, you have to change the corporation. To change a corporation, you know, you have to dissolve it and form a new one. So legal fees, banking stuff. And if you've pushed out the founders of the company, you have to buy out their stock, even though, you know, you have no revenue and that stock is probably worthless. So what does that mean? It means I spend hours in meetings with guys named Brad from marketing, and we argue over color palettes. So we think up all these like awesome, you know, .com names like, you know, Agilent. And in the end, we have to redo the company website. We have to do the graphical user interface so it conforms to the color palette. And who works with Java, right? Change the name of a Java, of a whole string of Java object files from, you know, com.planet7.whatever to net.agital.whatever. So, and then rerun all your regression tests. So long story short, too late. It's $150,000 spent by a company with no revenue, and buying out the founders for an undisclosed sum. So now it's early 2002. Dot-coms are falling from the sky like so much bird excrement, and our investors pull out their funding and they shut the doors to the company 6 months later. So this is like right after 9/11. You know, this was the at that time, that was the Great Recession, right? Which was just a speed bump compared to 2008. So when a company tanks, what happens is all of its assets, its like intellectual property, its branding and all that stuff is worthless. And if you're, you know, in a game of chess, if you think, you know, four moves ahead, you can take really great advantage of someone's distress. So fast forward 3 years. I'm living in my mom's basement, you know, after this horrible dot-com thing. And I finally get, you know, like a real decent job. Or I have a shot at a real decent job. And so I have to verify my employment. I have to, you know, for the last 5 years, I worked for this, like, imaginary dot-com that doesn't exist anymore. So I'm doing, like, my Google foo, trying to find, you know, some sort of indicator, some sort of voicemail box that I can, you know, point someone at and say, yeah, Agital was a real thing whenever that was. And I discover that the Agital.com website is still up. And a little more poking and prodding, I discover that our former business team is that it's not no longer this software company, this message-oriented middleware software company. It's a SAP consulting firm. So integration services for SAP. So SAP... Everybody's heard of it? Yeah. It's $1 billion just to get it, and then 9 years and another $1 billion to actually make it do anything. Fantastic. So the About Us page, their board of directors, is our old business management team. So, you know, what happened? Well, it depends on the day that you ask me and how much I've had to drink. So right now, stone cold sober, you know, I think, well, yeah, we didn't know what the hell we were doing, and we were caught up in this, you know, madness that was, you know, the dot-com days, and we were too busy fighting. So anybody ever work with a venture capitalist, right? So venture capitalists, what they do is they give you money to do cool stuff, but in exchange for that money, they get control of the company. And so whenever, it's like making a deal with the devil. So long story short, TLDR, venture capitalists are the devil. if you can avoid dealing with them, I highly recommend it. So we're so busy trying to find a place for our product in the enterprise integration landscape and fending off venture capitalists that are trying to take control and secure another round of funding so we can keep playing this game, that we didn't realize that, nobody knows what we do and nobody cares. So and then when I'm drunk, right, and all emo, I think, I was a really brilliant guy. We were really brilliant people. And these like jackal bastards just took total advantage of us and like took our work, and there's no justice in the world. So but I don't get drunk that often. So mostly it's just we didn't know what the hell we were doing. So the moral of the story is just because someone has a corporation behind them, that doesn't make them automatically know what they're doing. Corporations do dumb things. In fact, they're prone to them, right? If you're by yourself and you make a bad decision or you have a stupid idea, it's really hard to like do anything like real damage with that. But if you have like 60 people behind you, that's the beginning of a riot. And then if you set that bad decision making in a time when everyone is making the exact same bad decision, right? 2007, right? Everyone makes the same bad decision, and it seems like a good decision because everyone else is doing it. So, but in all of this chaos, like a chess game, if you think a few moves ahead, you can grab assets, you can grab control, you can grab all sorts of things, right? It's like a looter in a riot. Everybody's out in the streets, torches, pitchforks, whatever. You can smash store windows, run off of flat screen TVs, and nobody's probably going to be able to see you do it. So was that stupid? Was it evil? Well, so it's really easy to mistake stupidity for evil, especially if you're mad at the stupid people. So were we stupid? Didn't know what we were doing? Too busy worrying about all of our little petty drama? Oh, and our product was competing with products from Microsoft and IBM, right? What could possibly go wrong, right? So, or is it evil, right? So these fiendish masterminds deliberately crashed the company so that they could take control of like the brand name and the trademark search and all this like legal stuff that's really expensive, get it for peanuts, and then start their own company, right? And at the end of the day, that really means that like I was outsmarted by a marketing guy. So no, we were all dumb, right? There's no way that evil genius, an evil genius for marketing, got control of the company. So in conclusion, for my story, it really comes down to Hanlon's razor, right? Never attribute to malice, yada yada yada, but don't rule out malice. So corporate evil in you. Now we're like a little tiny company, right? And so our evil is like small. But if you grow the size of a company by, 100 million times, small evil becomes super, super big. So what's corporate evil? Well, corporate evil is, so the difference between stupidity and evil is you do stupid things by accident, and you do evil is, people get hurt, people lose money, people whatever, and you did it on purpose, knowingly, and for financial gain. So, what are good examples of evil things, right? Well, Union Carbide poisons India, makes everybody sick. What happened to them, I don't really remember. The auto industry, that whole unsafe at any speed, like before Ralph Nader was like a political dude, he was like in the 60s, he was like the Julian Assange, right? Like he just blows the lid off, all automobiles are going to kill you in some form or fashion. And they like stalked him and like tailed him and sent hookers his way to try to catch him in these, all to discredit him because, we don't want to spend more money to make safe cars. We'd rather you just go back to buying the death traps that we're selling you at their current price. Or you can just defraud or hurt your employees, like Foxconn, right? When the iPhone 4 came out, and now Foxconn is this Chinese factory that actually makes all the crap that Apple makes. Like it's designed in California, but it's built by, you know, Chinese children at gunpoint, right? And they get, like, suicides and all that stuff. So that was a big scandal. And so, and the funny thing is, Foxconn is like, oh, sorry, we're mistreating our people. We'll, you know, we'll boost their salary by 30%, right? And you, and you know, and we're still making money. Like, how little did you pay those people that you can give them a 30% raise? Like, it's weird. Like, you can afford to give them a 30% raise. How much are you profiting from that? And then investors hate to get screwed with. So Enron, WorldCom, you know, the list goes on and on. And then, you know, this round, it's what, Bank of America, ING, all of that stuff. Goldman Sachs, and I don't know, a bunch of companies that whose names escape me at the moment. And then you can always defraud the government, like not pay your taxes, you know, that sort of thing. But we don't really care about the government. So why does it happen? Well, greed, right? We're all greedy. We're all working really hard to make that money, right? And it's a lot easier to make money when you don't have to spend a lot. So anything that you can do to cut your costs, right? So you cut corners and safety features at a factory. You cut, you know, you move your workers over to some third world stink hole where, you know, you can basically pay the government to do whatever you tell them to do. Right, not paying your taxes, that's a great way to lower your costs. Or it's myopic executives. So you embezzle money from the company, you know, defraud people in various ways. So, well, how, you know, so a corporation, right, before we get into like the actual evil that they do, you have to think about like what a corporation is, right? And there's a accounting finance definition. There's like a law legal definition, right? This is where a lawyer would have been really handy, but instead you get me. But at the end of the day, what it is it's a legal entity, right? That's one facet. It's a bunch of stuff, right? Money, accounts, inventory, tools, factories, land, that kind of thing, vehicles. And then it's a brand, right? It's an identity. It's an idea. It's an image, right? Well, those three things are important, but they're not dependent on each other. They're not attached to each other. So if you game these things in various, you know, fun and interesting ways, you can take a lot of money and you can probably get away with it. So I'm going to hand the mic over to Andrea, and she's going to talk to you all about the fascinating, fast-paced world of accounting. Right? So, you know, fasten your seatbelts. Here it comes.
And hopefully it'll be everything you hoped it to be. I know everybody doesn't really get accounting. That's okay. I'm just going to try to give you the very, very basic points because it comes in later and maybe you'll be like, oh, I think I heard that. Other than that, nobody ever knows what my world is like, and that's okay. The three major important documents in a company is the balance sheet, the statement of cash flows, and the income statement. These just represent the entire company, if they're doing well, if they're not, as long as they're not lying. The balance sheet gives a snapshot of the company's financial situation at a given date and time. These are where the assets, the liabilities are, and this definitely tells the business worth. Next is the cash flow statement. It's the cash is coming in and the cash isn't going out in that period of time. Your receipts minus your distributions. Fascinating. Income statement. Now here's your revenues and your expenses, just a little different. The actual profits or the losses at a given time, you can see how well a company's doing. So what do we take with those when we cook things up? We're gonna falsify the books. Not really, but. So you have some common elements of fraud. Let's say you can mark it by the held or the conducted with secrecy, violates the employees, fictitious duties to the organization. It's committed for the purpose of direct or indirect financial benefit to the employees. It costs the employees, organization, those assets, revenues, or reserves. The definition of fraud, any crime for gain that uses deception as its principal mode of operation. Seems pretty straightforward. Then the major four elements of fraud, material false statement, knowledge that the statement was false when it was spoken, reliance on the false statements by the victims, and the damaging results from the victim's reliance of the false statements. Now, unfortunately, financial statements prepared in a way that misrepresents or manipulates, falsifying or altering accounting records go unnoticed because people don't pay attention. There's too many gray lines. You're just hoping that whoever's presenting you with these items are going to give you your end result.
Also, it's fantastically dull. That's the main reason.
Unless you're like me and you can see if profits have gone up. So then we go to some red flags. The disparity between free cash flows reported and reported earnings, large deferred tax numbers indicating higher earnings than those that were reported, and slower growth in retained earnings than reported earnings. And then how the numbers lie. False adjustments of corporate results can take place through complexity of arrays of tricks and methods. They've usually been categorized in five areas. You can falsify the revenues, recording revenues in the wrong period, falsifying costs and expenses, treatment of liabilities, mergers and acquisitions, and related accounting tricks. Three examples I'm going to use are Enron, WorldCom, and Tyco. And they're all completely different, three different ways in my world. So in Enron, and I'm sure most people have heard about this, Sherry Watkins, an Enron VP, wrote an anonymous letter to Ken Lay that suggested Skilling had left because of accounting improprieties and other legal actions. She questioned Enron's accounting methods and specifically cited the rapture transactions. Enron employees had made their money and left only Enron at risk for support of raptures. And then the rapture deals were written in such that when Enron was required to support them based off of their own stock, so when Enron's stock fell, the rapture losses would begin to appear on the financial statements. And then the SEC, which is the Security and Exchange Commission, which you have to follow those rules in the accounting world and business world, they started to investigate. Why are these things happening? Yada, yada. And so in October 22nd, 2001 is when everything started. And then in November, Enron officials admitted overstating those financial statements we talked about by $57 million since 1997. Enron, or the crooked E, filed for bankruptcy in 2001.
Not to be confused with the big blue E, which is Internet Explorer, right? Totally, totally different thing.
Gosh, you tick someone off?
Yeah. Right. Quickly.
And then the second one is WorldCom. They took the telecom industry by storm when it began in a frenzy of acquisitions in the 1990s. In 1999, revenue growth slowed and the stock prices began to fail. WorldCom's expenses at its percentage of its total revenue increased because the growth rate at its earnings dropped. This also meant that WorldCom's earnings might not meet Wall Street's analyst expectations, which is another reason when you're not keeping up with what Wall Street thinks you're going to do, people start to question. In effort to increase revenue, WorldCom reduced the amount of money it held in reserve to cover the liabilities of all those companies that they had acquired by $2.8 billion and remove the revenue line in its financial statements, which is bad because now you can't see it. Since this was not enough to boost the earnings, they began classifying operating expenses as long-term capital, hiding expenses, and it gave them another $3.85 billion. They also added a journal entry, which is another accounting thing to add things into the books, for $500 million and computer expenses, but no documents were ever found to back this. The SEC started an investigation and the controller admitted to the internal auditors that they weren't following accounting standards. So the accounting people might have been, but other people weren't. WorldCom then admitted to inflating its profits by $3.8 billion over the previous five quarters. A little over a month after the internal audit began, they filed bankruptcy. And Tyco. Tyco International has operations in over 100 countries and claims to be the world's largest maker of electronical components and electrical, the largest designer and maker of undersea telecommunication systems, the largest maker of fire protection systems and electronic security services, and the largest maker of specialty valves. Sometimes I can't speak when I am in front of people. According to Tyco Fraud Information Center, though, an internal investigation concluded that there were no accounting errors in anything that they found. The former CEO and general counsel were accused of giving themselves interest-free or low-interest loans, but the board never approved it, so they were doing it behind, you know, books and everything. They were also accused of selling their company stock without telling investors. This is an SEC rule, more of the guidelines you have to follow.
Normal people, you can't, if you own like a ton of stock and controlling interest in the company, you can't dump that stock based on something that you know. You have to sort of stay the course just like everyone else. That information asymmetry is the problem.
So there were $600 million stolen from Tyco International through these unapproved bonuses, loans, and extravagant company spending. Some of the examples that are rumored, $6,000 shower curtains, $2,000 trash bin, and somebody spent supposedly $2 million on their wife's birthday party. In 1999, the SEC began an investigation after an analyst reported questionable accounting practices. But the SEC decided to take no action because it wasn't actually the accounting, it was the people going behind the scenes and doing things that weren't the books. In January of 2002, the bookkeeping and accounting came under attack again. This drew to a $20 million payout made to a Tyco director. The SEC asked the parties involved to restore the funds, and they took from Tyco in the form of undisclosed loans and compensations. The outcome was those people went to prison and they paid fines. But since replacing the board members and several executives, Tyco International has remained strong now. Ponzi, boiler room, and pump and dump. So Ponzi schemes. We got pyramid schemes, also referred to, that's the Ponzi scheme, are structured such that they use the entry fees from participants to make profits for their early entrance to the scheme. They have no real product. The only money is you get when you enter the entry fee. A true Ponzi scheme usually promotes what appears to be a real investment, opportunity which investors contribute without actually being affiliated. A pyramid scheme, on the other hand, usually requires the participants to make a payment for the right to recruit people into the scheme, at which point then they receive the money. At the end of the day, someone's losing their money. Boiler room scams. So the boiler room operations are basically share scams, and they are Scroogey of investors. The operator will sell the investor shares at an inflated process to investors that are impossible to sell, they wouldn't have otherwise. A broker usually operates from an overseas firm, will cold call an investor and propose they buy shares for this particular company. The firm will operate from a boiler room hotspots in other countries, so they include, or they're outside the remit of the financial authority so that they're not responsible. They are called the boiler room scams because the highly pressured sales techniques employed by the broker. They're very forceful, they're very persistent, highly, highly aggressive. Pump and dump. According to this U.S. Secretary and Exchange Commission, this is one of the most common internet frauds. The company's website features glowing press releases about the financial health of some new company. The newsletters will put out all this information that makes you want. They're in chat rooms. Everything to urge you, this must be something good. Sometimes you even hear it on the radio or TV. Unwittingly, investors then purchase the stocks in droves, creating a very high demand and pumping up the price. When the fraudsters behind the scheme sell the shares at the peak and stop hyping the price plummeted, and then all the investors lose their money. Money laundering and offshores. Money laundering is the process of concealing illicit gains. Did you want to say anything here? You want me to keep going?
So, like in a nutshell, like money laundering, like when you want to hack into something, you use like a proxy or some sort of gateway. So, you know, I'm here in Cleveland. I want to break into something in Washington, D.C. I'll SSH into something in Israel or some, you know, dude's home computer. And from there, I'll launch my attack, right? And then the FBI or whoever kicks down that guy's door, or you know, you're in some country with no extradition laws or whatever. So money laundering is like proxying money. So you know, popping through shell accounts and things like that. So VPN for money is basically, you know, money laundering.
Which obviously he just said some of that stuff. But every time a crime is committed, the money is generated, a bad guy is faced with, what can I do? How can I conceal this? The bad guy wants to be able to do it without getting caught. It's, you know, putting it through certain channels to get to your end destination of not being busted. And I guess that's what you already said. So then we jump to offshoring, which is an international term meaning not only out of your country, your jurisdiction, everything, taxes, the global, anything that gets you out of the IRS as well. Reasons for offshoring, you can hide taxes, government, red tape, through the regulations that the government controls your business wealth and you, not the other way around, as our founders thought it would be. Crossing the border, then there's three types. Criminal, you got your racketeering, you know, trafficking, your slave trading, embezzling. You're corrupt, pretty much that's your government sites. You're criminal, here's more tax evading, transferring records, hiding, anything that you're avoiding showing what's on your bank account. Utilizing basically the same, just all the international chance, you know, falsifying documentations. And your starter kit. In order, if you want to do this, you can pick your own price and international transactions, use dummy corporations to shield all these activities so you don't know. You got some fake transactions, make things look like, you know, something else. With these techniques, you can shift all types of criminal, corrupt, and commercial dirty money like a pro, like a Mexican drug cartel, like Saddam Hussein, Al-Qaeda, or your corporate CEO. Then we can move on to your dirty money kit also. That's your falsifying prices, passing the money through dummy entities, fake transactions, and using whatever specialized things that you come across. And also, just an FYI, money laundering was made federal crime for the first time in 1986 with the adoption of the Money Laundering Control. In the United States, money laundering is a practice of engaging in financial transactions to conceal the identity, source, destination, or illegal gained money. In your ancient history lesson, how could I possibly? I have a classics degree. So regard your good name as the richest jewel you can possibly be possessed of, for credit is like fire. When once you have kindled it, you can easily preserve it. But once you've extinguished it, you find Argus was tasked of rekindling it again. The way to gain in good reputation is to endeavor to be what you desire or to appear. Socrates.
Thanks, Andrea. All right, give it up for Andrea. All right, so corporations do all this terrible, terrible stuff, you know, and they take advantage of us, regular people. So, you know, how do they get away with it and what can we do to stop them, right? The outlook isn't good. So with all these techniques, it's really tough to prove that a corporation's up to no good. And this is a feature, not a bug, right? Like the whole thing with a corporation is limiting liability. So if I start a business and that business makes stuff and that stuff hurts someone, they go after the business, they go after the legal entity, not after me. So this goes back to, you know, English, you know, to England before our Constitution. Corporations have been around forever. And then corporations do stuff to further limit their liability. And then even when you prove that they're liable for something, they've done stuff to sequester or hide, you know, what they have. So the only tool that we really have legally to fight this is litigation, right? So we sue. And so anybody ever sued somebody in like small claims court, right? Okay, so you win your case, right? The dude you're suing doesn't show up and they're like, congratulations, you win, right? Justice is served. How do you get your money? Precisely, right? Now, I sued my wedding photographer for taking pictures of my wedding and then never giving me pictures. And, you know, it was in and out, like small claims court, you know, you make your complaint, guy's not there, congratulations, you win. All right, now, so how do I get my money? How do I get my judgment? And they're like, hire a private investigator, put a lien on the guy's house, like, you know. So you sue someone, you win your case, you get awarded, you know, ? Profit. So, and this is where the press comes into play. So they're hiding, you know, they're hiding their assets, they're playing all these little games so that, you know, they're not really responsible for the things that they've done. And so the press, you know, makes a big fuss about it, and that's how we the people find out. You know, this is the fourth branch of government, right? Fifth branch of government. So, you know, scandals break. That's how we have Enron. That's how we have WorldCom. That's how we have ING. That's how we have all these things. But the problem is the press is also part of it, right? So news is a product. It's for sale. It's for sale by corporations. So businesses are there to make money. News businesses make money off news. The product that they sell are ads. So you watch CNN Money, you watch Fox, whatever, MSNBC, any, you know, it doesn't matter what political land, what political slant, whatever political leaning, watch the commercials. Any program on TV, you can tell exactly who it's targeted at by watching the commercials, right? So you watch the FX network, you watch, you know, Rescue Me, and it's like video game releases, slasher flicks, you know, Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition, right? Well, you watch anything about finance, and it's new cars, it's, you know, investing in, you know, insurance, those kinds of things, you know, awesome vacation spots, right? So old, rich, white dudes. If you're not old, rich, and white, financial news isn't for you. So, and, you know, the very people that they're supposed to be reporting on very often are buying their ads. So, you know, you can't really trust them. So, and so we have the scandal, you know, we've poisoned the brand, you know, the court of public opinion, you know, they've been found guilty and they're, you know, they're going to suffer. Well, remember, brand, identity, and legal entity, they're not the same thing, right? They're not even connected. So you can move a product from a company, you can move the company completely out from under the product and bring a new company in. This happens legally, you know, all the time, right? My favorite is the Palm, right? Who's old enough to remember U.S. Robotics, right? Okay, good, good. You know, there are people here that have never dialed up to the internet. Yes, yes, yes. So, starts off as U.S. Robotics. I don't know, some corporate mumbo jumbo happens. Now they belong to 3Com. Does 3Com still exist? Yes? Okay. Cisco hasn't eaten them yet? Not yet. And then it gets spun off into its own company, Palm One. And then the iPhone came out, and I'm pretty sure that Palm just committed Harry Caray. So a trademark, a brand name, logo, all of that stuff, you can sell that. You can sell that just like you can sell your product. You can license it. You can rent it. You can do all sorts of fungible things. AT&T, right? AT&T's been like 90 different corporations. It's been split up. It's been rejoined. It's, you know, it's ridiculous. So you can't even trust, like, what you see, what you know. You can't even trust that. So who changes their names because of a scandal, right? Blackwater, right? They shoot civilians, bad guys. They're still here. They're just XE. WorldCom, you know, filthy scum liars. Their MCI got eaten by AT&T, I think. You know, for all intents and purposes, they're still there. Philip Morris makes a product that kills people. Altria still makes a product that kills people, but none of us know who Altria is, so it's all good. Anderson Consulting, anybody worked for Anderson Consulting ever? You worked for something that worked for something that worked for Anderson Consulting? Right, that's IT contracting for you. So they changed their name from Anderson Consulting to Accenture because of an accounting scandal. Well, they changed their name, and then there was the accounting scandal, and the Accenture guys were like, whew, dodge that bullet. Right. Yeah. That is. Right. Right. More corporate mumbo jumbo. And we're still making our money, and that's really all that matters. So this is endemic. It's built into everything. Every corporation does it, right? Look at any corporation's website. They're headquartered in Ireland, which is a tax haven, but all their leadership is in the United States, right? Cisco, Microsoft, Dell, Pfizer. They all do it. They all do it. Ireland and Switzerland. If any company has holdings in Ireland or Switzerland, even though it's like a quote unquote American company, they're cheating on their taxes. So not that I fault them for that, but here's how it works. So more lawyer stuff that I have to give you because lawyers back out of things. So you elect Congress, right? Your vote counts, right? Democracy is good, but all the decisions are made in Congress by committees and subcommittees that you don't vote for, that you don't elect. The dude that you put into office, God only knows where he goes. So Congress can't possibly handle all of the regulation and adjudication of all the stuff, the SEC, the Federal Reserve, the Federal Trade Commission, any three-letter agency which is not law enforcement, because that's all the executive branch. All right, so you guys, we're all worried about the CIA, the FBI, the NSA. With good reason, but the whole show is actually in all those really boring agencies like the EPA. So Congress creates these agencies. They have the power to make rules, and they and the Congress and the President appoints the people that run these agencies. You don't vote for them. So if you want to talk about a Ponzi scheme, you vote for the dudes at the very top, for the President and the Congress. Right, and then all of that stuff underneath that is where the bullet hits the bone. Your vote isn't in there. So, and Congress, they're not experts on steel, railroads, communications, all these things. So they get experts that they trust from the industry that they're regulating. Right, so we can all Ben Bernanke and Goldman Sachs and all that stuff. We're going to shake our fists and get our pitchforks and run out in the streets, but it's all that way. Oil, energy, safety, you name it, that's how it's done. And it's like, but it's all right. We got the court, right? No, you don't. Okay, so what you get is, this is called the Iron Triangle. This is what like economists and political scientists call the Iron Triangle. So basically, it costs a ton of money to get elected into Congress. And Congress doesn't really do anything except create agencies that actually do all their work for them. The industry is staffed by, or the agencies are staffed by people from the industry. And the, somewhere in here, there is the, it's called judicial deference right here, this dude. This is the problem. So the Supreme Court, federal courts, all the courts, which is where we all have our day in court, and I get my lawyers, you get your lawyers, and we have a little rock 'em sock 'em robots thing. The judiciary always defers its judgment to the opinion of experts from the industry. So, game over, you lose. Thank you for playing. So, and the only way to fix this is like amendment to the Constitution. Which we're not going to get. Our political system is, two party. You can be, I'm a pirate party guy, you're a green party guy, you're a libertarian. No, there's two parties, right? One hand over here does something, one hand over here does something, and under here, all of these agencies sell you out. So, literally, unless you pick up a gun and start a revolution, it's never going to change. But that's all right. Right, because in the words of like the reboot conference, action is cheaper than control. It's way easier, simpler, and faster to just do things. Because by the time anybody figures out what you've done to tell you to stop, you've done it. It's done. It's out there. Right? So do stuff, and then they'll try to control you, and they can't. So how do we do stuff, right? That's really what it is. We use the tools of our oppressors, right? So we do evil things, but we do them defensively, and then it's not evil, right? Patents are a really great example, right? So everybody here, you know, knows about the problem with like software patents and all that, right? Okay, well, long story short, all software is built on all other software. All ideas for software are built on other ideas for software. You can't patent that because it's all, everything is prior art. All software is prior art. So vague patents are bad, right? I own the patent on like things that make computers do stuff. And you, Google, I'm suing you for $1 billion. And you, Facebook, I'm suing you for $2 billion. And you, Research in Motion, for your BlackBerry, I'm suing you. Right? It's bad, bad. So vague patents are bad. Software patents are bad. Vague software patents, doubly bad. Worst thing in the world. And Google, IBM, these guys have them. But they say, well, we have them, but we're not going to use them to like push people out of the market. We're going to use them to protect ourselves. Right? So these are defensive patents. Right, so if I shoot you in the head in self-defense, that's not murder, that's some other thing. Right, same principle. So we'll do evil stuff, but we'll do it defensively. And it's cool. Right? Like if I make a strategic retreat, I'm not running away, it's strategic. Right? If I drop out of an election because I'm not going to win, you know, that's strategic. I didn't lose. I made a strategic decision to, you know, run away. So, the dark side of liability. So we prove that people are responsible for doing bad things, right? And then we sue them. Well, so legal counsel then tells you, you know, don't do whatever that thing is. So you, right, no good deed goes unpunished. So risk management, this is what I love. If you can manage it, it's not risk, right? And if it's a risk, you can't manage it, right? So jumbo shrimp, you know, military intelligence, Microsoft Works, it's oxymoron. So, oh, good. Somebody remembers Microsoft Works. That's awesome. Okay. So, great example, restaurants. Who here's worked for a restaurant, right? How much food do you throw out at the end of the day? Like half of what you make, right? Wouldn't it be great if you could give that to starving homeless people? No. Some starving homeless person can hire a $6 million attorney and sue the pants off of you, right? So, no. Goes in the dumpster, and we lock the dumpster so that even after we've thrown it away, some dude can't climb into the dumpster and take your trash that you've thrown away and are not going to use, right? Office buildings. You ever drive through a corporate office park or downtown or whatever at night? Skyscrapers up to the sky, nobody in them, no one doing anything, lights are on, right? What could you be doing with that at night? The corporation is done. It's gone home. No one's doing business. You could be teaching classes in there. You could be for free because, you know, there's no overhead. You could be doing amazing things. But no, because some kid will trip over a network cable and break his neck and sue the pants off of us. So the GPL, right? There's nothing wrong with the GPL. That's like the greatest, the new public license. That's what gives us, you know, Linux, the Linux kernel. You know, that's awesome. Well, it's as is, no warranty. Like, I'll give it to you, but I can't just say, here, take it and do something awesome with it. Here's all these, you know, the freedom. I'm liberating you with all of my restrictions, right? So there's really only two reasons why you shouldn't be able to help someone. Budget, physics, right? I either don't have the thing that you need, or the thing that you need is impossible. But no, all this liability stuff, so. So this is where nonprofits come in. Right, so they're resistant to all of this evil by design. So they're donor supported. There are no greedy investors. There are rules against private inurement. Right, this word inurement, it always looks misspelled. That's the actual term, but no spell checker in the world knows what it is. It's some legal thing. So inurement is benefit. So if I work at a nonprofit and I lead the nonprofit to do something that benefits me personally, done for, right? So Form 990, that's basically like a company's tax return. Every nonprofit should have that out on their website. Total transparency about their operating expenses. And then they're also specifically exempted from political activities. So campaign contributions, lobbies, all that stuff, bad news. And, you know, there are ways around that, but, you know, in the strict definition, you can't do it. And they don't pay taxes, right? If you don't pay taxes, the government is really interested in every move that you make, right? Al Capone, right? Murdered, you know, responsible for all that murder, didn't pay his taxes, busted. All right, so they're not evil. They're also broke, right? So no evil, no money. The number one challenge that a nonprofit faces is fundraising. So nonprofits, they need money to keep their doors open. They need money to provide the services that they provide, right? The free store food bank needs money to get food to give to people. It also needs money to pay its rent, right? And and NPOs raise money in like spurts. So once a year, the United Way gives somebody a big fat check, and then that's just got to last you for a year, right? And so this is what accountants call cash flow. That's that whole balance sheet, watching the cash come in, the cash go out. Cash rules everything around me. So nonprofits aren't perfect, right? The American Cancer Society is a great example. So they have really high operating costs. So people give them all this money because, you know, I mean, it's cancer. They fight cancer, you know? And so it's like protecting kittens. Everyone loves that. So, but like a bunch of the money that you give them goes to just running the American Cancer Society. And they have these big offices and they have facilities all over the world and really high executive salaries. And so they're not running it very efficiently. Or maybe they're deliberately running it badly so that they can benefit other people. But the worst thing is that people accuse the American Cancer Society of just like making money off of cancer. Right, so it's cheaper to, or it's, you can make more money fighting cancer or researching curing cancer than if you just cured it, right? That's that whole action being cheaper than control. So this is my nonprofit, not mine. I share it with everyone. I had like the idea like Cincinnati should have a hackerspace, and I should just be that guy that won't shut up about hackerspaces until we have one. And so, like, I got a group of people together, and they, you know, they all shared ideas, and we figured out how to do it, and I'm really great. It's really great. So we're incorporated in Ohio as SADB Inc., right? But we do business as Hive 1-3, right? Because a brand is not a company. And so if we decide, all right, so we're the Hive 1-3 hackerspace, but we're also going to do some other awesome nonprofit thing, we've already got... SADB Inc. is the 501c3 charitable nonprofit, not Hive 1-3. So we do our Hive 1-3 business, and then we decide we want to cure cancer. You know, we just do, you know, Fuck Cancer Inc. over here, and there we are. So we have a warehouse, and the corporation owns and runs the warehouse. So if we, you know, in theory, if we burn it down, it's not us. It's 513, or it's SADB Inc. We sue SADB Inc. out of existence. SADB Inc. Sells Hive 1-3 as a brand to some other corporation to raise money to pay restitution, and some other company, Inc., does business as Hive 1-3. The film changes over, and the audience never knows the difference. So this is all speculation. As a matter of fact, I tried to get them to do two nonprofits. We could like swap assets and stuff back and forth, and like full on like evil corporation. I got voted down. So I've been on the board of directors since it started, and I use cupcakes to rig an election to become the chief technology officer. So I gave everybody cupcakes, right? It's just that if you voted for me, you got a big cupcake, and if you didn't vote for me, you got a little cupcake. So, but everybody got cupcakes. I'm not, you know, bribing people, but I bribe them. So. All right, so hackerspaces. Hackerspaces do awesome things, right? They educate people, they build a community, right? It's like a hackerspace is like a little tiny hacker conference that you have 24/7 access to. It's awesome, right? And we teach people to like do stuff for themselves. They fix their stuff. I learn how to fix stuff. I learn how to build stuff instead of buying it. And that's good. That's good sustainability, right? They take big risks, right? I mean, at the end of the day, what a hackerspace does is it invites any person off the street to play with power tools. Like, you know, you, yeah, you know, Shaky McDrinks a lot, take a soldering iron, solder a badge, it'll be awesome, right? At some point, those dudes, you know, we're gonna get sued, you're gonna get sued, everyone's gonna get sued, right? That's just how it is. Oh, you launch stuff out into space, right? What could possibly go wrong with that, right? And when you go to like get insurance or talk to a like a lawyer about getting help, they, you know, and they go, okay, so why are you doing this? They're like, because it's awesome, and they're like, syntax error, right? You, wait, do something because it's awesome? Yes. What other reason is there to do something? So, so our generation of hackerspaces will eventually give way to a new generation of hackerspaces, just like the hackers from the 80s gave way to hackers from the 90s, gave way to, you know, the hacker slash maker slash, you know, group of people that we have now. So in the future, they'll, you know, they'll want to take on bigger projects, solve big real problems. Right now, most hackerspaces are really good at solving problems that are solved by like a electronic device with LEDs that's about this big, right? Which is noble, which is awesome. They'll take over the corner of the market for like handheld LED things. But, you know, real big problems like food, energy, transportation, you know, that kind of thing. But big projects are big risks. Like a little handheld battery-powered something isn't going to kill anyone, right? I guess you could, yeah. Like I guess you could eat it, but you know it's not going to. But a car, food, a house that has the potential to kill multiple people. So also, so big projects, big risks. Big projects need big funds. So ordering circuit boards from China for $10 each, not that big a deal. Building a car, BFD. Oh, so beyond grants, beyond donations, we're going to have to say that dirty, ugly word, capitalism. So if it looks like a corporation, it probably is a corporation, right? So what we do is what the big corporations do. We fork our projects, spread the abuse around, the liability around. But you got to stay transparent. Always got to stay transparent. So here's my crazy idea. I'll go real fast because they're coming over here to boot me off the stage. So big projects, big funds, new way to do finance, right? So I call it hacker finance. So microfinance, just like Grameen Bank, small nonprofit bank, for like projects that require stuff, you know, hardware, that kind of thing. Low interest rates, roll the profits into what I call the National Endowment for the Hacks. So like the National Endowment for the Arts, but for cool hacker stuff. So in a way an endowment works is somebody gives you like $100,000 to do cool stuff, but you don't spend that $100,000. You put that $100,000 in an account, and whatever money that $100,000 principal earns, that interest, you can use that to do whatever you want. So it's sustainable. So profits from the microfinance side, you know, you loan out money. Low interest, so you give out money, get a little more money back, that money off the top, used to keep operating the bank, and then whatever else is left goes in the endowment. So, so huge risk, right? I mean, it's a nonprofit bank. I mean, is that even possible? You know, is that even legal? I don't know. Lawyer could tell me if he was here. Failure is, you know, more debt, just what this country needs, just what regular people need. Financial gambles like this are why 2008 and 2009 and forward sucked. And it needs tons and tons of funding, right? If you're going to invest conservatively and only see 2 or 3% return, you're going to need like $100 million before you can do anything awesome. So now we're going to do questions and answers, but I don't think we can do it here. So, yeah, so Case, it's up the steps, double left. And that's where we'll be if you've got, you know, questions for me or for the lovely Andrea.